Hello and welcome to the reading of the Des Moines Register for Thursday, July 30th, 2020. I'm your reader, Susan Hack. Things are changing very quickly, and Iris wants to make sure we provide our listeners with as much information as we can. In order to do that, we've changed our program schedule completely. This schedule will air statewide on all platforms until further notice. We'll also include information about resources in your community during each paper. You'll still hear your Des Moines Register each day at 9 a.m., 6 p.m., and 1 a.m. Please listen closely to the following changes for all other newspapers. The Fort Dodge Messenger will be read at 7 a.m., Monday through Friday. This hour includes readings from the Storm Lake Times and the Webster City Freeman Journal. The Mason City Globe Gazette will be read at 8 a.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Your Des Moines Register will continue to be read from 9 a.m. to noon. The Cedar Rapids Gazette is now read at noon 7 days a week. The Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier will be read at 1 p.m. Sunday through Friday. The Dubuque Telegraph Herald will be read at 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil will be read at 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Sioux City Journal will be read at 4 p.m. 7 days a week. The Ames Tribune will be read at 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. And the Midweek Shopping Cart will be read each Wednesday at 9 p.m. Recordings of all newspapers will be available on our podcast page. Go to iowaradioreading.org, click Listen Now, then click Listen to Iris Podcasts. The papers are organized by region. Keep yourself safe and thank you for listening. Now let's take a look at today's weather. In Des Moines, clouds and sun today with a shower or thunderstorm around, high of 82 and low of 65, with winds northeast from 7 to 14 miles per hour, partly cloudy tonight. Cedar Rapids will see cloudy skies today, with a high of 80 and low of 59. In Dubuque, a high of 80 and low of 59 with partly cloudy skies. Fort Dodge, high of 83, low of 59, cloudy. In Mason City, a high of 81 and low of 59 with partly cloudy skies. Sioux City, high of 83, low of 58 with some thunderstorms around. And Storm Lake, high of 81, low of 59, cloudy skies. And here's the first story from the front page of today's Des Moines Register. Public universities take $65 million in cuts. Regents approve $1.5 billion general operating budget by Charles Flesher. Iowa's three public universities will take a $65.4 million hit this budgeted year as a result of declining enrollment amid the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, on top of an $8 million cut in state funding approved by the legislature last month. The Iowa Board of Regents unanimously approved a $1.5 billion general operating budget for the schools Wednesday afternoon. That includes $727.9 million for the University of Iowa, $629.9 million for Iowa State University, and $170 million for the University of Northern Iowa. The universities expect to bring in $53 million less in tuition this year as a result of the enrollment decline and an across-the-board tuition freeze approved by the regents in June. Every pocket of our university has been impacted by the virus, University of Iowa President Bruce Harreld said Wednesday in a presentation to the board. And it will continue to affect Iowa, Iowa State, and UNI in the coming months as the schools welcome students to campus. If there is one thing we've learned since March, we need to expect things to change, Harreld said. Every time we think we understand where this virus is heading, it surprises. Iowa's three public universities moved classes online in the spring and closed campus buildings to students and faculty as the novel coronavirus first emerged in the state, costing the schools $178 million in lost revenue and added expenses, according to an earlier estimate. That loss estimate includes more than $41 million in tuition refunds. Iowa State has since revised its loss estimates upward. ISU President Wendy Winterstein said the university is working to overcome as much as $114 million in coronavirus-related losses from spring 2020 through June 30, 2021. Now, as the schools prepare to once again host in-person classes, Iowa's universities are facing, quote, significant, end quote, costs to provide enhanced protective measures, according to budget summaries provided by each school. John Jepson, a PhD candidate and president of the Campaign to Organize Graduate Students at the University of Iowa, said dependency on tuition dollars is driving a return to campus at a time when many public health professionals warn of the potential for spreading the virus. We see this historical trend of tuition dependence butting up against this ongoing crisis, and they've positioned themselves in such a way that the only means of making adequate revenue is having people on campus paying for services, Jepson said. Coronavirus is not the only factor affecting university finances, Harold said. Changing demographics in the Midwest are lowering undergraduate enrollment, and cuts in financial support from the state play a role in reducing overall revenue, he said. The University of Iowa has reduced class sizes since hitting an all-time high of 5,600 first-year students 4 years ago. It is expecting about 600 fewer freshmen to enroll this fall, Harold said. Since we're in a world of declining state support, it doesn't make any sense to overfill our classrooms or to over-enroll students, so we have to erect more and more residence halls, he said. We just don't have the resources. ISU budget summary. All three public universities are projecting enrollment drops this fall. That projection of fewer students, coupled with the tuition freeze, is expected to cost Iowa State University $33.4 million in revenue this year. The drop in tuition revenue at the University of Iowa is expected to be $14.8 million. UNI is set to lose $4.8 million. Each school will share in the $8 million cut in state aid, with the University of Iowa and ISU each taking a $3.2 million hit, while UNI loses $1.5 million. Since March, the universities have lowered expenses through a series of steps that included layoffs, salary reductions, hiring freezes, and cuts to programs. The presidents of all three universities have taken voluntary salary cuts for the coming year. Harold's $590,000 salary will be reduced by 50% starting August 1st. The $270,416 will be directed to the school's Student Emergency Fund, which supports students who experience an event, such as COVID-19, that negatively and severely affects their academic success. Winterstein's $590,000 salary will be reduced by 10%, and UNI President Mark Nook's $357,110 salary will be reduced by 11.8%. Some athletics staff and coaches have also participated in voluntary salary reductions. In April, Winterstein announced a 5% budget cut to all ISU divisions and halted performance-based compensation increases. The school now will offer voluntary retirement packages for about 1,200 employees and reduce the amount it contributes to staff retirement packages by 2% over the next 10 months. The latter is expected to save the university $4.8 million. More actions may be necessary if additional revenue reductions or unforeseen expenses occur during the fiscal year, ISU wrote in its budget summary. The University of Iowa did not renew contracts of some instructional track faculty and assistants and implemented a hiring freeze for 32 positions and froze salaries for another 4,200 employees. The university has cut funding for Hanscher Auditorium. It plans to scale back funding for the Performing Arts Center over the next 3 years with the intention of making Hanscher a self-supporting operation. We can no longer use resources that are primarily student tuition to support a community asset, Harold said. The budget approved Wednesday includes a combined $45.5 million in federal relief money through the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, CARES, Act, which set aside $14.25 billion for higher education institutions. Half of the money each school receives goes directly to students in the form of financial aid. Details about the school's athletic budgets have not yet been released. Due to the volatility of the fall sports schedules resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic, the regents said in a news release, those athletic budgets will be considered by the board in September. Our next story from the front page. Gun control group allots $1 million to flip Iowa House. Money goes to Democrats in 15 suburban districts. By Stephen Gruber Miller. A gun violence prevention group is pledging to spend at least $1 million to flip the Iowa House of Representatives to Democratic control this fall, a signal that outside organizations are willing to spend heavily to compete for control of the state house. Controlling the Iowa House is a top priority for Democrats and Republicans this fall. Republicans hold a 53-47 advantage, meaning Democrats could win the House if they flip 4 seats from Republican control. That would mean Republicans would no longer simultaneously control the Iowa House, Senate, and governor's office, which they have done since after the 2016 election. The gun group, Every Town for Gun Safety Victory Fund, is targeting 15 state house races in the suburbs of Iowa's major cities. The group is the political arm of Every Town for Gun Safety, a nationwide gun violence prevention organization co-founded by former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who also campaigned to be president. With full control of the Iowa legislature and governor's office for the past 4 years, Republicans have significantly rolled back regulations on guns in Iowa and allowed gun owners more freedom to carry weapons. Senior political advisor Charlie Kelly said the Everytown spending will cover a mix of digital ads, direct mail, and potential television advertising. Many of the targeted races are in the suburbs of cities such as Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, and Davenport. Spending on legislative races can go a long way. Although Everytown's $1 million commitment is dwarfed by the $80 million that has already been spent or raised in Iowa's U.S. Senate race, where Democrat Teresa Greenfield is challenging first-term Republican Senator Joni Ernst, spending can go a long way in a statehouse race where there are fewer voters to target, and candidates don't raise as much money. The investments at the state legislative level have outsized impact, Kelly said. We're going places where we can win electorally, but with an eye towards future legislative victories. And the Iowa House is exactly that, he said. Every town's Iowa spending is a portion of the $60 million the group has pledged to spend on races around the country in 2020. Independent expenditures alone do not capture the full picture of spending in Iowa. With no donation limits for state races, large campaign contributions can go directly to Iowa candidates. Some independent spending may also not be reported through the Iowa Campaign Ethics and Disclosure Board, where political spending is reported. Every town's spending this year marks a significant increase from previous cycles. Campaign finance reports show the group spent around $124,000 in 2016 to oppose former Representative Ken Reiser, a Republican from Marion, but hasn't otherwise invested in Iowa until this year. In all of 2018, independent expenditures across the state added up to $543,000, with much of that going to the competitive governor's race that Republican Governor Kim Reynolds narrowly won. In addition to Everytown's spending, affiliated groups such as Moms Demand Action are organizing weekly phone banks in Iowa to call potential voters and talk about the candidates' records on gun issues. Erica Fletcher, a volunteer leader with Moms Demand Action, who lives in Johnston, said that despite having to organize virtually because of the coronavirus pandemic, the group hasn't slowed down. "We had the platform and the infrastructure there that we didn't even skip a beat," she said. Other groups also geared up to spend on House races this year. Everytown's spending will not go unchallenged. Richard Rogers, a lobbyist and board member with the Iowa Firearms Coalition, said he expects his group to have significant resources and said it intends to get involved in state House races, particularly for the Iowa House. He did not say how much the organization would spend. "We think it's important to maintain pro-Second Amendment conservative majorities in the House and Senate," he said. And a number of other outside groups are expected to spend in Iowa this fall to influence control of the state House, including national organizations devoted to electing Democrats and Republicans to state legislatures. The Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee has spent more than $200,000 in Iowa so far this election cycle. DLCC President Jessica Post said the state is competitive up and down the ballot in 2020. "In 2018, we flipped 5 seats red to blue and fell short of a majority in the Iowa House by just over 500 votes. This year, we're only 4 seats away from flipping the chamber." Suburban districts in the state have been trending blue for years, and top Republicans retired in droves, leaving critical competitive seats vacant. The high turnout in the primary shows just how energized Democrats in the state are, Post said in a statement. Stammy Williams, communications director for the Republican State Leadership Committee, said Iowa Republicans are focused on delivering results and defending their legislative majorities. "We are willing to spend whatever it takes to keep Republican leadership in Des Moines and state houses across the country. You can't put a price tag on a safe, flourishing communities," she said. And our last front page story? Lots of Iowans driving on expired licenses. Governor's extension set to lapse next month, by Ian Richardson. 4 months after the coronavirus prompted the Iowa Department of Transportation to shut down walk-in appointments at its license renewal stations, the number of Iowans with expired licenses has more than quadrupled the normal level. More than 45,000 Iowans had expired driver's licenses as of last week, up from a typical range of 7,000 to 10,000, according to the Iowa DOT. Many of the outdated licenses remain valid under an emergency proclamation signed by Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, which covers licenses that expired as far back as January 16th. But Reynolds has indicated the extension will end soon. When Reynolds renewed her emergency proclamation on Friday, the updated proclamation noted, quote, "Iowans should not expect," end quote, "the relaxed guidelines will extend past August 23rd. Iowa, by law, has a built-in 60-day grace period for expired licenses, but thousands of Iowa licenses that expired more than 60 days ago will immediately become invalid once the proclamation ends. Iowa DOT staff are working through the backlog of expired licenses, contacting motorists to encourage them to set up appointments or renew their licenses online if they are eligible to do so, said Melissa Gillette, director of the Motor Vehicle Division. "We have been focusing on the number of Iowans who have an expired license beyond their 60-day grace period, and we are starting to see this number come down as both DOT and county treasurer offices work to catch up with the backlog," Gillette said in an email. Gillette said as of Friday, there were more than 35,000 people statewide whose licenses had expired within the past 60 days and more than 10,000 whose license expired more than 60 days ago. She said it's difficult to know precisely how many license renewals have been delayed because of the pandemic. The state database doesn't differentiate between licenses in need of renewal and licenses that have expired for other reasons, such as a move out of state or a loss of driving privileges. The Iowa DOT announced the suspension of walk-in license renewal March 16th, when it issued a news release asking customers to postpone in-person services and make appointments for urgent visits. The goal was to reduce the number of people waiting at the centers. People who schedule appointments must now wear a mask and undergo a health screening when they arrive. Gillette acknowledged the wait times for appointments have been long. Appointment schedules have recently been booked 3 weeks out, she said, but the Iowa DOT has been encouraging Iowans to continue checking back. The DOT is also offering six-month license extensions for those who need more time to make appointments, Gillette said. Motorists must have a license expiring within 90 days to get the extension. Recently, the number of license renewals has been on the rebound. Last week, there were 18,500 license and ID cards issued statewide, matching Iowa's pre-coronavirus volume, which typically sits between 17 and 20,000. The resurgence in license renewals has come as more Iowans are returning to the state's roads. Iowa DOT data showed a steep drop-off in traffic during the first few months of the pandemic, but traffic levels are now steadily rising. In mid-April, the DOT's data show the number of vehicles traveling on Iowa's interstates, highways, secondary roads, and city streets collectively dropped 60 to 70% below the number from that time last year. Over the past week, traffic has been around 10 to 15% below the same period last year, said Jeff Von Braun, the leader of the team preparing the traffic reports. We're still below where we were last year, he said, but we're closer to normal than we were last month, the month prior, and so on. For now, many expired Iowa driver's licenses are still good for more than just driving. The Iowa Alcoholic Beverages Division has followed Iowa DOT guidance regarding the use of expired driver's licenses and IDs for alcohol purchases. Iowans can still use a driver's license that expired as far back as January 16th, or an expired license plus proof of a six-month extension from the Iowa DOT. For Iowans seeking to fly, the Transportation Security Administration is accepting driver's licenses or state-issued identification that expired as far back as March 1st at its checkpoints. TSA will accept these expired IDs for either a year after their expiration date or 60 days after the emergency ends, whichever is the longest. The Department of Homeland Security has also moved back the enforcement of requirements for airplane passengers to present driver's licenses or state-issued IDs that comply with the federal Real ID law to October 1, 2021, a year after the guidelines were originally scheduled to take effect. Now a story from the Metro and Iowa section. Des Moines Metro gains jobs in June. Despite reopenings, economic weakness remains, by Tyler Jett. The unemployment rate for the Des Moines Metro improved in June as retail businesses and restaurants continued to reopen. The Des Moines Metro's unemployment rate dropped to 8.8% in June from 10.9% in May, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics survey data released Wednesday. About 7,800 fewer workers in the metro reported that they were still unemployed. Regardless, the region's economy is still markedly weaker than it was before business closures prompted by the COVID-19 pandemic. The unemployment rate remained more than double the 3.4% recorded in mid-March, and the size of the labor force, the number of workers over 16 who have jobs or are looking for work, dropped to 349,000 from 362,000. The decrease implies many people are not seeking employment amid the continuing pandemic. The number of unemployed workers in the metro in June was 30,681, up from 12,226 in March. The statewide unemployment rate for Iowa in June, reported earlier this month, was 8%. Des Moines has largest increase. Of Iowa's seven metropolitan areas, Des Moines has seen the largest increase in the unemployment rate from March to June, a jump of 5.4 percentage points. Cedar Rapids and Dubuque experienced the next largest increases at 5.3 and 4.9 percentage points, respectively. Ames, home of Iowa State University, and Iowa City, home of the University of Iowa, have experienced the largest proportionate increases in unemployed workers. The number of people out of work in Iowa City jumped to 6,963 in June, from 2,519 in March. In Ames, it rose to 3,273 in June, from 1,225 in March. Yet, Ames and Iowa City's unemployment rates for June were the lowest among the state's metros. It was 6.1% for Ames, down from 7.1% in May, and 7.2% for Iowa City, a drop from 9% the previous month. Elsewhere in Iowa, in addition to Ames, Iowa City, and Des Moines, June unemployment rates for Iowa metro areas were 11.1% for the Quad Cities, the highest, down from 14.4% in May. 9.2% for Cedar Rapids, down from 11.1%. 8.7% for Dubuque, down from 12.6%, the largest month-to-month drop. 8.3% for Waterloo-Cedar Falls, down from 11.1%. 7.4% for Sioux City, down from 8.7%. For Omaha-Council Bluffs, it was 8.1%, up from 6.4%, from 3.5% to 34.3%. Nationally, the Logan, Utah metro area recorded the lowest metro area unemployment rate for June at 3.5%. The highest was in Atlantic City, Hamilton, New Jersey, at 34.3%. Among the nation's 10 largest metro areas, six had unemployment rates in the double digits, led by Los Angeles at 18.1% and New York at 17%. The lowest rates were in Dallas-Fort Worth and Washington-Arlington-Alexandria, both at 8.4%. Many economists warn not to draw overly broad conclusions from the Bureau of Labor Statistics metropolitan area reports, because the sample sizes are often small. But the information does help provide insight into general trends over the course of several months. Another story from the Metro and Iowa section. Another arrested in triple teen homicide. Victim's mom calls it a bittersweet moment. By Philip Jones. A third person has been arrested in connection with a January shooting in Des Moines that left three teenagers dead. Leontrell A. Jones, 17, was arrested Tuesday in Peoria, Illinois, Des Moines police said in a news release Wednesday. Jones was located in Illinois by U.S. Marshals. When he returns to Iowa, he will be charged with three counts of first-degree murder and one count of first-degree robbery, police said. Brothers Devontae Swanks, 19, and Malachi Swanks, 16, and their friend Thane Wright, 15, were killed in the shooting on January 30th. Officers found the three teenagers, quote, executed, end quote, by gunshot in a walk-in closet of a duplex in the 600 block of East Hackley Avenue. Emmanuel Tote Jr., 19, and Deshaun Gills, 21, both of Des Moines, were charged in February with three counts of first-degree murder and two counts of first-degree robbery. Their cases are ongoing. Devontae and Malachi Swanks mom, Christina Duncan, on Wednesday said the latest arrest was, quote, kind of a bittersweet moment, end quote. She declined to comment further. Whoever did this took my son from raising his daughter, Duncan said in late January. Took my youngest son from seeing his niece grow up. This is not right, she said. Vincent Swanks, Devante and Malachi Swanks' father, told police that the six teenagers were at his duplex the evening of the shooting. Vincent Swanks left the home for a few hours. When he arrived home around 11:20 p.m., he found his sons and Wright dead. Wright had messaged his girlfriend throughout the evening of his death, said he feared he could be shot, and essentially said his last goodbyes, Brad Youngblut, a Des Moines police detective, said during a February preliminary hearing. He, Wright, feared something bad was about to happen to him moments before his phone stopped working, Youngblut said in a February. Youngblut said a neighbor overheard a large commotion and loud thuds around 8:15 p.m. through a shared wall. Game systems, cell phones, and other property belonging to the victims were missing from the home. Youngblut said the teenagers had made several trips to a nearby gaming store. Gills was also arrested February 1st on an attempted murder charge in an unrelated drive-by shooting in the 2100 block of Evergreen Avenue. A woman was injured in that January 31st incident. Tote and Gills are next scheduled to be in court on September 10th. Next, Montana Mike's appears to be total loss after fire. Employees, diners safely evacuate restaurant. By Sarah K. LeBanc. A Tuesday afternoon fire that caused the collapse of a North Des Moines restaurant's roof has likely resulted in a total loss of the building, a fire official said Wednesday. Four employees of Montana Mike's Steakhouse at 5030 Northeast 14th Street called 911, evacuated themselves and 19 customers at around 3:30 Tuesday. No injuries have been reported. Des Moines, Sailorville, Ankeny, Altoona, Delaware Township, and Johnston Grimes fire departments responded to the call. The restaurant is believed to be a total loss, said Lieutenant Rick Thomas with the Des Moines Fire Department. I don't think there's going to be much to salvage, Thomas said Wednesday. The cause of the fire and where it originated is still under investigation, he said. Crews were on the scene of the fire for about 5 hours. When we got there, it was through the roof, Thomas said. 2 hours after the fire started, aerial attacks on the fire were the only way to douse it because the structure was too dangerous to enter, Thomas said. The adjacent BP gas station was damaged from water and smoke and will remain closed for an indefinite period, Mahoon Lal, the station's manager, said Wednesday. Efforts to reach the restaurant's officials were unsuccessful Wednesday. The restaurant posted appreciation for its customers' support Tuesday evening on Facebook and, on Wednesday, posted information about a fundraiser for its employees. The Great Iowa Fall Ride Canceled Over Virus by Courtney Crowder. The Great Iowa Fall Ride is the latest coronavirus casualty. Organized by the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa team and host town, Iowa Falls, the fall ride, which had been planned for October 2nd to 4th, was supposed to feature paved and gravel trails that wound cyclists through central Iowa, giving them views of the Hawkeye State's fall colors. But plans were scrapped Wednesday due to safety concerns amid the still-spreading coronavirus pandemic. As with Ragbri, which canceled this year for the first time in its nearly 50-ride history, the decision to call off the fall ride came as planning deadlines loomed. It's really unfortunate that we're having to do this again, but it's just the right thing to do, Dieter Drake, ride director, said in a news release. 2020 is just not a great time for events, he said. The announcement came on the heels of virtual Ragbri, a series of online events and digital challenges that allowed bicyclists to share stories of their at-home pedaling adventures during the originally scheduled week of RAGBRAI. Drake said his team will now shift their focus to preparing RAGBRAI 48, which will be held July 25th to 31st in 2021. The overnight towns announced in January and the meeting towns revealed during virtual RAGBRAI will remain on the 2021 route. Iowa sees three more coronavirus deaths. From staff reports, another three people with COVID-19 have died, and there have been an additional 458 confirmed cases, the state reported Wednesday. At 10 a.m. Wednesday, the state was reporting 839 COVID-19-related deaths, an increase of three deaths since the state's tally at 10 a.m. Tuesday, according to the state's coronavirus.iowa.gov website. COVID-19 is the respiratory disease caused by the coronavirus. The state was reporting at 10 a.m. Wednesday that there are 43,196 confirmed cases of coronavirus, an increase of 458 since 10 a.m. Tuesday. According to the state's website, there were 212 confirmed cases Tuesday and have been 232 additional cases Wednesday as of 10 a.m. Of those tested for the virus on Tuesday, 6.6% were positive. Since the state started tracking the positivity rate, 9.3% of people who have been tested were positive. Of the 43,196 people who have tested positive, 31,196 have recovered, according to the state. The total number of people tested is 463,935. Including 3,224 on Tuesday. At 10 a.m. Wednesday, the state was reporting 246 hospitalizations, down from 253 on Tuesday. In the past 24 hours, 23 patients have been admitted. Also, there are 76 patients in the ICU, up from 75 on Tuesday. Would Senator Grassley's proposal delay jobless payments for Iowans? An article by Tyler Jett. After complications with the first coronavirus stimulus plan left some workers waiting several weeks for unemployment benefits, experts warn of another round of delays if states have to implement a new proposal from Iowa U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley. The $1 trillion coronavirus stimulus package, sponsored by Grassley, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, comes as a $600 a week federal supplemental payment to people on unemployment, approved March 27th, comes to an end. Grassley's plan would renew it at a much lower $200 a week, then shift in October to paying varying amounts with the goal of providing most recipients 70% of what they earned when they were employed. The proposal is precisely what Iowa Workforce Development Director Beth Townsend asked the federal government not to do when she testified before Grassley's committee in June. She said basing federal payments on a worker's former wage would create, quote, a labor-intensive and lengthy process for each claim, end quote. Limit the calculations a state must perform to pay out federal benefits, she said. A flat rate for all those eligible for a program is absolutely essential to being able to implement the program quickly and efficiently. Townsend declined to comment this week on Grassley's proposal. In a memo, the National Association of State Workforce Agencies estimated that any new program based on a percentage of worker wages would take 8 to 20 weeks to implement, depending on the state. During a conference call with reporters Wednesday, Grassley, the most senior Republican in the Senate, said the federal government would provide a waiver to states that are unable to implement the new payment program by October. Those states could then continue to pay $200 a week to workers until December. Grassley said the fight over unemployment payments will be the largest hurdle in negotiations between Democrats and Republicans for the next stimulus package. In their own legislation, Democrats have proposed that the federal government continue to pay $600 a week through the end of March. There's got to be room for negotiation there, and I think that's going to be the biggest problem, Grassley said. A so-called, quote, replacement rate, end quote, payment, like the one Grassley proposed, was popular among Democrats and Republicans when Congress began negotiating boosted unemployment payments in mid-March. But both sides backed off the idea when state agencies warned that their workers would need months to implement the new system. Old technology and new problems. Decades-old technology is the most significant hindrance to implementing the proposal. Many states' computers still run on COBOL, a computer programming language that dates back to the 1950s. In her testimony last month, Townsend told the Finance Committee that Iowa Workforce Development uses a system created in 1972. On top of the old technology, states have had to deal with an unprecedented influx of claims. Townsend has previously said that Iowa Workforce Development's customer service daily call volume increased from 800 in early March to 28,000 on March 30th, as coronavirus-related business closures swept the state. Workers in Iowa told the Des Moines Register they waited on hold for several hours to try to file unemployment claims. Some could not even get far enough into the system to be placed on hold. Others reported calling the line every day for about a month to try to get through. In addition to the $600 federal payments, Iowa Workforce Development had to write new computer systems to handle pandemic unemployment assistance, another stimulus program that expanded who qualified for benefits. And the state had to guard against a nationwide scam targeting unemployment. National Employment Law Project senior policy analyst Michelle Evermore said adding Grassley's proposed 70% replacement rate will be more challenging in Iowa than in some other states. The formula for each state's unemployment payments varies. Evermore said that in Indiana, for example, the state agency pays an income replacement rate of 40%. The government should be able to figure out how to boost that rate to 70% relatively smoothly. But in Iowa, the state makes a payment based on a formula that takes into account how much workers earned in the most recent quarter and how many dependents they claim. A second problem is the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which pays benefits to part-time employees, independent contractors, and other workers who don't normally qualify for unemployment. Rather than sort through tax paperwork that shows how much each independent contractor actually earned, Evermore said, some state agencies have paid a flat rate to simplify the process. Now, those state agencies will have to go back and determine how to pay a 70% replacement rate to those same workers. That's going to be really difficult, she said. Nobody's taking that into account. I don't think there's a good answer to that. Payments too high? With the $600 flat rate federal payment, about two-thirds of workers received more money from unemployment than they did at their old jobs, according to a study from the University of Chicago economists. Though the data is heavily skewed by low-income jobs, the median worker received about 134% of wages while unemployed. Grassley and Townsend have both argued that the $600 payments were too much, slowing the economic recovery as workers refused to return to their jobs. Townsend said at the June hearing that the state had received over 3,000 reports from Iowa employers telling the agency that workers had declined when summoned to resume work. But Economic Policy Institute Director of Research, Josh Bivens, said the $600 payments have been a boon for the country's economy, allowing people to keep their homes and avoid bankruptcy filings. He also said the payments support jobs, as unemployed workers spend much of the money at shops and grocery stores. Opportunity Insights, a team of economists that looks at high-frequency data, said credit card spending in the U.S. increased significantly around mid-April as workers received boosted unemployment payments and $1,200 stimulus checks from the federal government. In Iowa, despite the boost in unemployment payments, the number of workers filing continuing unemployment claims dropped from 190,000 at the beginning of May to about 116,000 last week. Meanwhile, Iowa added about 69,000 jobs from April to June, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Protesters to Reynolds. Restore Voting for Felons by Maya Miller. It's been more than 6 weeks since Governor Kim Reynolds met with civil rights leaders and pledged to sign an executive order restoring voting rights. And activists with Des Moines' Black Lives Matter aren't letting her forget it. On Tuesday, nearly 200 demonstrators marched from Des Moines Public Schools' Central Academy onto Grand Avenue and posted up in front of Terrace Hill. "Use your pen," they shouted up from the street. A group of, quote, "Wall of Moms," end quote, supporters in yellow shirts linked arms to lead the march. As the marchers passed over the Grand Avenue Bridge, organizers hung banners on the north side that read, quote, "60,000," end quote, and, quote, "Need to Vote," end quote. This is a movement built around good trouble, organizer Matthew Bruce said, referencing a quote by the late Representative John Lewis, a civil rights icon. "And we're going to get in some good trouble today," he said. Felons in Iowa are barred from voting unless they apply individually to the governor's office to have their rights restored. Iowa is the only state in the country that maintains this rule. More than 60,000 Iowans, including nearly 1 in 10 African American adults, are barred from voting in the state due to a prior felony conviction. Next, Urban Dale's Pool Saved in Narrow Vote by Shelby Fleeg. The Urban Dale public swimming pool is staying afloat for now. The Urban Dale City Council voted 3-2 Tuesday night to reject the Parks and Recreation Department's recommendation to permanently close the facility, the last remaining public indoor pool in the Des Moines Metro. The city has discussed what to do about the pool's growing maintenance costs and revenue losses for more than a decade, but will continue those talks at a later date. "We're left in this very untenable situation where we do not have a plan, and we have, basically, a money pit of a pool, but it does serve some needs in our community," Bridget Carberry Montgomery said after nearly an hour of debate. She joined fellow council members Matt Blake and Ron Poggi to vote against the staff recommendation, while council members Adam Obrecht and David Russell supported closing the pool. More than 660 people participated in a public online survey in recent weeks. Residents were asked to describe their current use of the pool and whether they would continue to swim if the city arranges to provide them subsidized memberships at nonprofit or private pools through partnerships with groups such as the YMCA of Greater Des Moines and the Goldfish Swim School. Of those surveyed, 85% said they were Urban Dale residents. 72% said they had used the city pool in the last 3 years, and 60% said they were less likely to participate in aquatics programs if the city partnered with nearby facilities to subsidize memberships. The pool, which is owned by the city and sits next to Urban Dale High School, was built in 1976. At that time, the city and the Urban Dale Community School District entered a 50-year agreement set to expire in 2026. "The pool has become increasingly expensive to maintain, with costs to keep it open amounting to more than $1 million in the past 12 years, according to the Parks and Recreation Department. Costs are only expected to increase as the pool further deteriorates. Besides maintenance costs, the city lost money operating the pool, providing a subsidy of roughly $300,000 a year for the past decade to make up for the lagging revenue," a council document says. City officials have debated the fate of the pool since at least 2008, when it needed major infrastructure improvements. The coronavirus pandemic forced the pool to close in mid-March, exacerbating revenue concerns. The city drained the pool to eliminate costs for heating and treating the water, and it remains closed to the public. The city plans eventually to design a new swimming facility, depending on the outcome of a possible future bond referendum, according to its website. But that project would be on hold until the economic impacts of the pandemic relent, possibly years from now. "By voting as we have, the pool remains open," said Russell. "When will reopening occur? I don't know. But until then, what now? We need to give staff some kind of a direction." Woman dies after being hit by runaway tractor. Clear Lake State Park utility vehicle rolled downhill. By Philip Jones. A 21-year-old Wisconsin woman died Tuesday afternoon after being struck by an unattended, state-owned tractor near a beach at Clear Lake State Park. Mercedes Cole Hart of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, was sitting near a beach at Clear Lake State Park around 4:13 p.m. when the unattended, state-owned tractor rolled down a hill and struck her, according to a news release from the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office. The compact tractor was sitting on the top of a hill on a grassy area near the beach, Sarasota County Sheriff Kevin Pals said. "The small utility tractor is used for tasks like clearing brush," Pals said. Cole Hart was in Clear Lake vacationing with her boyfriend, Pals said. They were on the grassy area when the tractor struck Cole Hart. "Brakes on the tractor were applied when it started rolling," Pals said. "We have no idea why that tractor went loose," he said. Cole Hart suffered severe injuries and died at the scene, according to the news release. The incident remains under investigation. "There's nobody that wants to see somebody involved in circumstances like this," Pals said. "It's just terrible." Concern raised about coverage of cop trials. From the Associated Press. Prosecutors said Tuesday they might revisit the issue of audiovisual coverage of the trials of four former Minneapolis police officers charged in the death of George Floyd. The Minnesota Attorney General's office did not offer a reason Monday when it opposed allowing cameras in the courtroom for the former officers' trials. But in a filing Tuesday, Assistant Attorney General Matthew Frank said, while the prosecution supports a public trial, prosecutors are concerned that live audio and visual coverage in the courtroom, quote, "may create more problems than they will solve," end quote. Audiovisual coverage could alter the way attorneys present evidence, subject participants to heightened media scrutiny, distracting from the trial, and may intimidate some witnesses, Frank wrote, reiterating points made last month by Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. "Testifying in public is challenging enough. Live audio and visual testimony could potentially deprive the state of the testimony of certain witnesses," Frank wrote. But he said the issue perhaps can be revisited as trial approaches. Derek Chauvin and three other former officers are scheduled to go on trial in March. Under Minnesota court rules, a judge can allow the recording and reproduction of criminal proceedings if both sides consent. Hennepin County Judge Peter Cahill has yet to rule on the matter, but the state's position, unless changed, makes it unlikely that he will allow cameras at trial. Last month, Cahill ruled that cameras would not be allowed during pretrial proceedings, after prosecutors objected. Floyd, who was black, died May 25th after Chauvin, who is white, pressed his knee against the handcuffed man's neck for nearly 8 minutes. Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. Jay Kang, Thomas Lane, and Tao Thao are charged with aiding and abetting both second-degree murder and manslaughter. All four officers were fired after Floyd's death. Defense attorneys have said they would be open to audio and visual coverage of the trials, saying the recordings are necessary to guarantee the officers get a fair trial. Urbandale Council passes resolution urging masks by Shelby Fleig. Urbandale is the latest Iowa city to formally encourage its residents to wear face coverings to help curb the spread of COVID-19. The Urbandale City Council unanimously passed a resolution Tuesday night endorsing practices like social distancing and masks. Mayor Bob Antwig later signed the resolution, which is not a mandate and is not enforceable. "Wearing a mask is an easy step we can all take to protect our family and friends," Antwig said in a news release. "Until we get a vaccine, a mask is one of the best tools we have available," he said. Earlier this week, Ankeny Mayor Gary Lawrence signed a proclamation asking residents to wear face coverings in public places, and the city of Des Moines has said it will require face coverings in city buildings when they reopen to the public. Mayors in Iowa City and Muscatine have taken firmer steps in recent weeks, issuing proclamations requiring masks in public places, and Johnson County is taking similar action. Des Moines has considered, but not adopted, a mask mandate. Governor Kim Reynolds, however, has declined to issue a statewide mask mandate and, backed by Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller, has said that mayors do not have the authority to issue orders that go beyond those she has included in her own coronavirus emergency proclamation. So far, however, neither Reynolds nor Miller have taken steps to quash the city mask mandates. In Muscatine, the county attorney has said he will not enforce the ordinance. And in Iowa City, police have said they will issue citations only as a last resort. And that does it for the first hour of the Register on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Up next, we'll give a shout-out to all our listeners who are celebrating a birthday today. I'm your reader, Susan Hack. Thanks for listening.